Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. It's our Pets and Vets show for the month today. And here to take your calls is old favorite Dr. Ron Scharf from the Animal Hospital of Niskayuna, New York. Dr. Scharf, a 1985 graduate of the Veterinary College at Cornell with an extensive background in conventional veterinary medicine and some other stuff too, including acupuncture, which we've talked about before. Dr. Ron Scharf, welcome back to the show, sir.
Thank you so much, Ray. It's great to be back.
Now, the lines are loaded right now, but the number to call when you hear somebody hang up is 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. So you hear somebody hang up, that's your cue to call. You can also email us, voxpop@wamc.org. If the emails come in fast and furious, I can't guarantee we'll get to them all, but we will try to get to as many calls and emails as we can. If you are providing your information via social media or email, give as much info as you can on your pet, including their age and sex, especially if you are submitting a question, say, via Twitter at WAMC Radio. Just use the hashtag VoxPop. But it's kind of tough to get the full details in a limited number of characters. So email works, voxpop@wamc.org, or the phone number, which really works on a call-in show. It's 1-800-348-2551. So, all right, Ron, before we get to the calls, question from Alan in Albany. He's really close, actually. He's over in the corner office. All right, so, and I'll try to be as delicate about this question as I can. If your dog tends to eat his duty, is it effective to put hot pepper on it? That's the question from Alan in Albany.
Well, this alleged Alan in Albany person, I wouldn't know without having tried it. I think that I would imagine too much pepper might have some, at least discomfort, if not the possibility for harming the dog.
No.
What we do is put a vegetable protein in the food that then, after it gets metabolized and excreted, has a bad, bitter taste, so
okay.
I hear.
All right.
And would tend to dissuade some dogs from going after their own business, though not all.
Mm.
Some dogs have a damn the torpedoes type attitude.
Yeah.
And then the tried and true way is just picking up after the dog and not giving them the opportunity. Alan in Albany.
Yeah. Thanks, Alan in Albany, for getting us started with a truly repulsive topic. Let's go to Connie in Amherst. Connie, you're on.
Hi. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Sure.
I have almost 5-year-old male have an ease, and he has had liver problems since the day I got him. He's been on denimarin for high liver enzymes, and through x-rays, we found he had an enlarged liver, and another x-ray was taken to look at his back, and again, they found the liver to still be enlarged. So he's going in for basically, what do you call it when you take out a piece of the liver?
It's a biopsy.
Right.
Lapidectomy, I guess?
Yeah. What is it called? Lapidectomy?
It's just a liver biopsy.
Yeah. So he's going to have that. Now, what could cause an enlarged liver?
Connie, there are actually, several things that can cause an enlarged liver. Basically, enlargement is just a non-specific manifestation of inflammation. Usually, sometimes it could be caused by other things like tumors or cysts or abscesses. Those are possibilities as well. An abscess usually would produce a high fever and a high white blood cell count, so you'd probably know that already. An ultrasound can often give us useful information about what's causing that liver to be enlarged.
Well, he's had that.
Oh, he's had an ultrasound? Good.
Yeah.
So I take that to mean that there was a diffuse problem. In other words, the entire liver was involved and not just one lobe?
My doctor just said he needs to have.
Yeah. Well, usually, Connie, where ultrasound is the most helpful with helping diagnose a liver problem is if you have a discrete problem, such as a tumor or an abscess or a cyst in the liver or stones in the gallbladder, that those things would show up easily on an ultrasound, whereas if it's something involving the entire organ, then that's more challenging, and that's where the liver biopsy comes in. I think it's a good idea, more invasive, but it gives you a great chance of finding out the answer to your question.
Okay.
Good luck, Connie.
Thanks, Connie.
Okay, thank you very much.
Sure thing.
All right, over to Dave in Pittsfield. Dave, you're on with Dr. Ron Scharf.
Greetings. Well, last night, or not last night, but a week ago, my wife took our dog out for the last walk of the night, and we're sitting on our front lawn with a skunk, and we have a terrier-type dog, so naturally he had to mix it up with the skunk.
Oh, boy.
And got a face full of spray and so forth. Now, the question is, and there's a lot of things going around, what is the best thing to clean the dog up with? We used Pine Sol because it was available.
Pine Sol?
Oh.
Jeepers creepers.
That little, and then my wife had heard less toil,
oh.
And then others have said, oh, no, you get tomato juice.
Well, that's the old sort of folk wisdom. What's the skinny on this?
I'll go with the old. I'll give you a few alternatives,
sure.
But I personally also go with the old tried and true tomato juice. But what I do is I'm pretty, aggressive about it, because what I'll do is soak the entire animal, let that tomato juice stay in there and seep for 5 or 10 minutes, rinse it off, and do it again, and then do it again, and do a total of 4 or 5 times.
Wow.
You're looking at an hour, and then washing it off. But there's one, no matter what alternative you try, and you could try Dawn dishwashing detergent and Sculpt mouthwash. The big problem with anything that you use, Dave, is that most of these things, you got to be real careful about the face, the eyes, and et cetera. What's the biggest recipient of that skunk's spray? It's the face.
Yes.
So that's where the big chink in the armor is. And so what I'll do is I'll be very carefully putting that tomato juice that I use around the face, avoiding the eyes especially, and then rinsing it out in a way that it doesn't get in the eyes. And that's how I try to do it. But, you're never going to get everything out, but if you do it 4 times, 5 times, let it stay on the dog for 10 minutes at least, then I found that that's pretty good. A lot of people like the Sculpt mouthwash or the Dawn dishwashing detergent. I've never heard of the Pine Sol or the Lest Oil. Personally, it sounds toxic to me, or at least potentially toxic.
Napalm?
And,
no.
Napalm?
No.
That might do it. Nuclear device, maybe.
It's aggressive.
You need a lot of tomato juice, right?
You need a lot of tomato juice. Gallon or more.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Right. V8, would that work?
V8 might do it. Who knows? It's more balanced, I guess.
All right.
But the problem usually is you don't have it available when it happens.
Yeah.
Okay. And I noticed the one thing the dog did when he came home is he found a lot of dirt to rub his face in.
That's an accessible thing to do if you're an animal.
Yeah.
It's better than nothing. Absolutely.
Right. Well, that stinks, literally. Sorry.
Well, I don't mind the skunk, so it wasn't too bad for me, but my granddaughter and my wife are
pretty much the
complainers. And I don't know if the dog minded. Yeah, he minded it because it hurt him, the spray in his eyes and so forth.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Well, thank you very much. So tomato juice is a viable.
Yeah, and Dave, don't expect the terrier to learn its lesson.
No, we don't.
Well, Dave, thanks for the call.
Thank you very much, gentlemen.
You're welcome. Good luck.
Number to call is 1-800-348-2551. This one came in via email, Doc. It's from Amanda, who says, I have a 2-year-old chocolate lab mix dog. Her nose is a light brown color. My question is whether or not I should be putting sunscreen on her nose this summer, and if I should, is there a special dog brand, or can I use the same sunscreen that I use on myself? That is from Amanda.
So, Amanda, it's a good idea. It's good thinking about the UV lights, etc. And there sure are breeds, such as the Collie, that can get some pretty bad problems on their noses, which is made worse or exacerbated by sun. So it's not a bad idea to be protecting your dog from the sun. I would not assume that there will be a problem if you keep your lab in the sun. As far as what the best thing to use would be, I would imagine sunscreen would be fine, except the problem with no matter what you use is that most dogs lick it off.
Oh, yeah.
So no matter what you put on, whether it's sunscreen or I'm not sure, maybe even the zinc oxide might be good that the lifeguards wear or the football people. But the trick would be when you put it on to have a treat in your hand, a high-value treat that the dog likes, that the dog knows you have in your hand, and as soon as you smear that stuff on the nose, you whip that treat out and you say, da-da-da, do you want this treat? Do you want this biscuit? And distract the dog, and hopefully that would make the dog forget to lick the stuff off the nose. But they're licking their nose all the time, so that's the biggest problem. No matter what you use, I don't know that it's going to help that much. But there are things that could be done, and sometimes there are more aggressive things than that. But for your dog, Amanda, that's a lab, young, I don't think it's something that will likely cause a problem.
Okay, and then, well, I don't know. I'll ask you this question now. We have to go to a break at 20 after. I don't think you'll have time to answer. Here we go. This is from Donna. My cat is 5. Her vet found a heart murmur, class 4, and referred her to a cardiologist who diagnosed her with SAM, I think, with no cardiomyopathy. Now her regular vet, who originally diagnosed it, can't find the heart murmur. Is it possible it just disappeared? You have 30 seconds. Go.
Yes, it's possible that it could have disappeared, although SAM, if that's systolic anterior motion of the valve leaflet, I wouldn't expect it to go away, though I've heard many cats have a murmur and then not have a murmur, and I think there are some cats that when they're stressed out, they're more likely to hear a murmur, so the longer I keep my stethoscope on the cat, 30 seconds, a minute, minute and a half, and then I might not hear the murmur. So, but if the cardiologist actually saw something on the echo, it makes it less likely it's going to go away. That's for sure.
Dr. Ron Scharf is our guest. It's Vox Pop on WAMC. 1-800-348-2551 is the number. We'll get back to the phones in a moment.
Support for WAMT comes from Wash & Wag Pet Grooming Salon, Great Barrington, Massachusetts. Professionally trained groomers, organic natural products, no cage drying, Facebook and 866-WASH-WAG. Washington County Tourism. Farm-to-table farmers markets, craft beverage producers, U-Picks, and farm stands with farm-fresh products. WashingtonNYCounty.com. Stories Nursery, Freehold, New York. Featuring an assortment of plants, flowers, trees, shrubs and garden supplies, Monday through Sunday, 8 to 5, a gardener's destination, storiesnursery.com. Sheehy Opticians, Albany, New York, providing eyeglasses, including Bevel, Lafont, and Pro Design, progressive lenses from Verilux and Nikon, and Maui Jim, Costa, and Ray-Ban sunglasses, sheehyopticians.com. Berkshire Co-op Market, Great Barrington, Massachusetts, working with over 50 local farmers this summer to offer over 100 locally grown products, Berkshire.coop for mission and business model. And Quality Foreign Car Care, Ballston Spa, New York. Sales and service of Audi, BMW, Mercedes, Volvo, Saab, Volkswagen, and Porsche, QFCC.com.
Vox Pop on WAMC. Pets and Vets today. Boy, the lines, Doctor, are loaded today. We will get to as many folks as we can. I apologize in advance if we don't get to you.
Let's move.
Yeah, all right, all right. You said it. We'll do it. Ann in New Paltz. Ann, you're on.
Hi, thank you. I have a question about laryngeal paralysis. I have a 15-year-old lab who had been taking thyroid, still does in her life. And she's been living for 2 years with a laryngeal paralysis, and I want to know what I can do to help her, and is this a progressive disease? She's not overweight. She has a great appetite. Her exercise level and getting upstairs is still pretty good. She's on gabapentin for a sort of nerve pain and carbapenem for an anti-inflammatory and her thyroid. And I keep the area where she lives cool. What more can I do, and what can I expect?
And you're doing a whole heck of a lot. The single biggest thing that I would recommend, which I would bet from listening to you, you're already doing, is to stay on top of that thyroid level as much as you can, at least twice a year, to make sure that your pup is getting the right amount, because laryngeal paralysis is one of the most common causes of laryngeal paralysis, what some vets call LARPAR. And then you're saying she was not overweight is totally important, and that was the first thing I was going to ask you, because if they are overweight, that's going to make the problem worse. There are surgeries that could be done for an amp, but you usually don't do the surgeries unless they're in extreme shape. But the laryngeal paralysis, the LARPAR surgery, is something that'll pull those laryngeals, that anatomy, open up the airway better. And if your dog's not having a lot of problem breathing, getting the air in, then I doubt that you're going to have to worry about it. I would imagine that there's not much voice left, but, you know, that's not in itself necessarily a problem. So I can't think of anything else unless you want to start thinking about going alternative. Maybe some alternative modalities might help. I personally...
Any in particular?
I don't have any personal experience dealing with it, but acupuncture or homeopathy are two things that you could look into. And otherwise, thyroid level, good weight like you're already doing, that's it.
Okay.
And is it a progressive disease, or will we kind of hold in the pattern we're in, or do you know?
I do not know, but in your dog's case, Ann, if it's already been around 2 years and the dog's been doing okay, then I would doubt that it's going to get worse at this point, especially with the dog being 15.
Yeah.
And that's pretty impressive for a lab right there. So,
I mean, what's the average lifespan of a lab?
Well, most retrievers or dogs that size, I would say 12 years old, but the labs, they don't look at the books. They don't read that 12 or 13 is the typical life expectancy for a retriever-sized dog. They'll go to 14, 15. I've even seen 16-year-old labs. It's
okay.
Amazing. They're like that Energizer bunny. They keep on going.
All right. Well, Ann, thank you so much for the call. Over to Nancy in Schenectady. Nancy, you're on with Dr. Ron Scharf.
Hi. I'm actually calling with a problem which... My niece, I've been helping her with getting ready to move. It's going to be a 350-mile trip to the new place.
Okay.
And she has a dog, and the dog won't be a problem. The three cats are what I'm kind of concerned about, and so is she. They are showing behavior problems even now whenever she has to be gone for several days. They were used to having three people in the house, her parents and her, and the parents are both gone now. And so she goes away and then comes back and finds that they've peed on her pillow and her mattress and things like that. They've even peed down the furnace grate. And it's just been horrendous. And other signs of anxiety as well, pulling out hair and stuff like that. And I'm just kind of wondering, well, one thing is the 350-mile drive itself, and the other thing is when she gets to the new place, handling them so that there's a place that I don't know how to, you know, if there's a way of making them feel more secure so that they will be comfortable.
Yeah, well, you have to do, you know, she has to do the move, so it'll have to work out either way, but what's the easiest way, doctor?
So it's a tall order, Nancy, because there are several things going on. First of all, there's changed conditions such that there are times that the cats are left alone that they're not being used to, and they're already displaying behavior problems.
Right.
But number one, make sure that it is a behavior problem, because it's not out of the question. It could be a urinary tract problem that you might be able to fix. I have been surprised before. Elimination disorders in cats are the most common behavior problem, but I have been surprised. Something that sounds obviously like a behavior problem, but you do your analysis and you see that there's a feline lower urinary tract condition, some of which might be treatable with, believe it or not, antidepressants.
Huh.
That's one thing. Make sure it's not a physical problem. Number two, I would try to get those cats used to crates, assuming that you will be using crates to move them those 350 miles. What you want
to
do is create an attraction for the crates for the cats. So you put their favorite treat in there. You do it again. You do it a million times. You reward them for going in there. Encourage them to spend time in the crates. Get them to get into a good relationship with the crates,
That's a good idea.
Number three, oftentimes when cats are stressed and they have to be in a car going somewhere to the vets or wherever, it's very good if you could cover those crates. Okay, so there's less visual stimulation. Number four, there is a pheromone called Feelaway, F-E-L-I-W-A-Y. I've mentioned it many times on the show through the years. And that Feelaway, I would spray it into the crates. I would even spray it onto a kerchief that the cats could be walking around with. You can't do it 5 minutes before the trip. You have to have it in the environment for a while, days or whatever, and then have it sprayed in the crates. Number five,
could
drugs.
Could you spell that again, the name of it?
F-E-L-I-W-A-Y.
F-E...
F as in Frank.
Feline.
Oh, yeah.
Like feline.
Okay.
F-E-L-Y...
I.
I.
W-A-Y.
W-A-Y, okay.
Okay. You're booting up your computer. Good for you.
I'm booting it down.
Oh,
actually, I've got to get going for an appointment.
Okay,
have, but...
well, quickly, number five on doctor's list.
Number five is pharmaceuticals. There are anti-anxiety medications you could use, such as alprazolam. And you might want to try doing so-called dry runs with each of the cats to see what level they need. It's a pretty harmless drug, but it is a very good anti-anxiety medication. And also, lastly... more of a dog problem, but if they get any kind of motion sickness, there is a very good medication for that as well,
okay,
called Serenia. So those are six odd things that you could start looking into, Nancy, for your niece. Good luck with 350 miles.
Uh-huh.
And, oh, as far as the new house, if you could bring some scents from the new house back to the old house, you know, impregnate some sweatshirts, some old sweatshirts or whatever in the new house, and then have the feel away, the pheromone already in the new house.
Yeah.
And try to do things that will make it as familiar and comfortable as what the cats are already used to. Make sure they have plenty of room so that they could stretch out and they're not crowded into one little room and then feel stressed because of that. And good luck.
Thanks, Nancy. We appreciate it. Over to Kathleen in Colony. Kathleen, you're on.
Hi. I have a 10-year-old corgi. And she's had a chipped tooth for a while, and the last time I was at the vet, they looked at her chipped tooth, and then they said she had plaque on her back teeth, and they recommended, you know, they recommended that I get her teeth cleaned, but I just have a lot of problems with the anesthetic, and I'm just wondering if that's what I should do.
So, in a word, Kathleen, yes. I happen to be, you're talking to a big proponent of teeth cleaning. And the reason is because at that age and younger, 10 years old for a corgi and younger, the benefit to cost ratio or benefit to risk ratio is so in the direction of the benefit outweighing that risk. The risk is, of course, the anesthesia. But if you do a good physical exam, make sure that heart and lungs sound good, number one. Number two, do a blood test to make sure the organs are working correctly. The organs that we all depend upon to metabolize and excrete that anesthesia in a timely way. If it's sticking around in the body for too long, that's where the danger is. Number three, have an intravenous catheter and be supplying IV fluids so that the blood pressure can be monitored, because that is one of the most important things. If the blood pressure is going too high or too low, you could adjust those fluids to accommodate and have that dog be as safe as possible. There are other monitors that I'll use as well, a pulse oximeter. And so it's not just a blood pressure and a pulse oximeter, but there are even more monitors than that. So if you are doing your work as a veterinarian and a vet technician, and you're staying on top of those things, then the risk is very, very low. Unless, Kathleen, the dog already has a history of a heart problem or some other organ. But the teeth are the single biggest thing that will improve our pets and this country's quality of life, bar none. Okay? That's it. They feel much better.
Okay. And all the things you mentioned, they do that blood. They do all. Well, you know, I'm going to take your name because... If something happened to this dog, something's going to happen to me.
I'll take full responsibility.
No, you won't. Our legal department says he will not take full responsibility.
Not.
No. Tell me your name again, doctor. You're in Niskayuna, right?
Yeah, my name is Scharf, S-C-H-A-R-F.
First name is Ron.
All right. And I just have two other questions. Do you have any problem with using Frontline for fleas? There was some stuff on Facebook about Frontline not being good or...
causing skin problems. I've always used Frontline on her, and it's been good.
No, I have no problem with it, Kathleen. Any insecticide anywhere always is going to have some small percentage, or not so small, of problems, okay? Nothing is going to be 100% safe, and no animal is going to be 100% protected against all possible insecticides. But the Frontline, I think the track record of safety is very good. However, it's been around so long, Kathleen, that there are cases of resistance showing up. Uh-huh. So I don't think it's as effective as some other products at this point.
Oh, all right. Kathleen. And I also give her glucosamine chondroitin for her joints. I mean, we're in the park every day, and she seems to be, you know, really peppy. You know, she's a little overweight. Corgis, that happens to corgis, right? I mean, mm-hmm. But I it's my fault. She's about 30 pounds, 32 pounds. Okay. So she's a little overweight. But
Well, the glucosamine is good if you have arthritis, but it's not effective whatsoever as a preventative for arthritis.
All right, Kathleen, we got to move it along here, but thank you so much for calling. Over to Eileen in Tilson. Eileen, you're on.
Yes, hello. I have a three-part question all having to deal with ticks.
Okay.
We're hearing a lot about co-infections for tick-borne disease in humans. Are you finding this in animals? And the second part of my question is, my vet doesn't seem to be using doxycycline, is using minocycline. Is that more or less effective than doxycycline? And are cats immune to Lyme disease?
All right.
Okay, good questions. The co-infections, the answer is yes, Eileen. We see it often. The most common heartworm test that most veterinarians use is called a 4DX, because it checks not only for heartworm, but also Lyme and two other tick-borne diseases. Those other two tick-borne diseases are called Anaplasma and Ehrlichia. And it is sure not unusual to see dogs coming up positive for more than one of those. Now, the more interesting part of that would be, is that co-infection clinically significant? And that's an answer that I'm not aware of, how much work has been done to check into comorbidities with more than one tick-borne infection. So,
right.
You know, the Lyme of the Anaplasma, the Lyme of the Ehrlichiosis kind of thing. But all three of them are treated with the tetracycline family medication, which classically has been doxycycline. The problem, Eileen, is that about 2 years ago, the doxy became unavailable.
Why?
And so, who knows? This happens all the time. Maybe the glue on the back of the label was bad, and
right.
maybe there was a glass shard. You never
okay.
know.
All
and
right.
At some point, there's so many of these back orders and unavailabilities that you don't even ask questions anymore. So when the doxy became unavailable, we migrated over to minocycline, which is the same family. It's pretty much as effective. I think that the doxy is now available. By the way, it wasn't totally unavailable. The doxy just became astronomically expensive,
okay.
Like tenfold more expensive than it was. Now the doxy is available again, so we're kind of migrating back to it. But they're both the same family. They're of roughly equal effectiveness.
Okay.
As far as the cats, you don't hear about cats getting Lyme. It's not that it's impossible. It's just that it's not on the radar. It's just you don't see it too much, if ever. I've personally never seen it.
Thanks, Eileen. 1-800-348-2551 is our telephone number. 1-800-348-2551. Andrew in Poughkeepsie. Andrew, you're on with Ron Scharf.
Who's this, Andrew?
Yeah, are you Andrew?
Oh, yeah, yes.
I'm Ray, and then Ron Scharf is the vet.
And I am not. All right, my comment about the skunk spray.
Yeah.
I tried a solution of heavy soap and water, and then added baking soda.
Really?
To kind of get rid of the smell. I don't know exactly how effective it was, because the dog took a heavy hit, and so it was hard to tell if it really worked, but seem to make a difference. And also, dabbing as much oil off of the dog with paper towels before you bathe the dog.
Oh, that's possible. If you catch it fast enough, sure. That's a great idea.
Yeah, so that's it.
All right. Good one. Thanks, Andrew.
Yeah, we appreciate that. Well, that's interesting. You know, I wonder. Now, if you have a little backup in your sink, you put some baking soda down, and then you put some vinegar, distilled vinegar in, and it... You think you could do that on a dog?
Don't know. I don't know. Some of these chemicals, I'm not going to endorse anything like that. I'm not going to endorse anything like that, especially with a biological organism. I have no idea. Baking soda plus vinegar.
Well, why does tomato juice work? The acid?
Baking soda, it's probably safe. Why does baking soda work?
No, why does tomato juice work?
Oh, tomato juice. I can only speculate, Ray. It's an acidic solution. Maybe the maybe one of the active ingredients in the smell of a skunk spray is basic, alkaline. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, this is very interesting.
I never researched it.
We need science on this for the
you
next
could
time.
Let someone else do that science.
You know what? That's a cop out, doctor. 1-800-348-2551 is our telephone number. 1-800-348-2551. Tell you what, let's take a break a minute early, Jess, and then we'll get back to the phone calls. It is Vox Pop, and we welcome your calls. We'll be back.
Support for WAMT comes from Windy Hollow Veterinary Clinic, Montague, Massachusetts. Conventional and integrative veterinary medicine, including acupuncture and chiropractic therapy, comprehensive pet care and health services since 1998. WindyHollowVet.com. SPAC, presenting the 38th annual Fryhofer's Saratoga Jazz Festival with Erica Badu and The Hang on the Lawn, presented by Stella Artois, Saturday and Sunday. SPAC.org for tickets. Manny's TV and Appliances, family-owned since 1977, now offering olive oil from his vineyards in Crete, available at Atkins, River Valley Market, Randall's, Foster's, and Big Y grocery stores, mannysoliveoil.com. Boyden & Perrin, Amherst, Massachusetts, providing foreign and domestic car, truck, and SUV repair services, and a Massachusetts inspection station for over 50 years, boydenandperrin.com. Rogers Book Barn, Hillsdale, New York, a bookstore on a country road with 30,000 used books and classical CDs, open 11 to 5, Thursdays to Mondays, rogersbookbarn.com. And Lori Stillwell, CPA PC, providing tax and accounting services for businesses and their owners in Saratoga Springs and beyond, stillwellcpa.com.
Vox Pop on WAMC, 1-800-348-2551, pets and vets today, Dr. Ron Scharf. And, of course, you start talking about remedies for skunk spraying, and you get calls and emails. And this one came in via email from Nancy. It says, skip draconian lest oil and Lysol, highly toxic to dogs and people. Don't ever, ever use it. Here's Nancy's foolproof skunk spray remover and procedure. You ready? You writing this down, doctor?
Writing.
Wipe off dog with towels. Check. Mix 1 quart peroxide, half cup baking soda, 2 teaspoons dish detergent. Wet coat with the above mixture. Rub into the coat and leave on 5 to 10 minutes. Rinse thoroughly and follow up with regular dog shampoo. Really works, says Nancy.
Well, I like that. I do know that, and I've heard for many years when you say dish detergent that people are using Dawn. That's why it has to be Dawn. I don't know. It probably doesn't make any difference. Also, the Scope mouthwash I heard for many, many years, a lot of people said it was the best one. This baking soda keeps cropping up. What the interaction between the peroxide, the baking soda, and the detergent is, I don't know, but it sounds like a plausible mixture.
And again, we don't, we aren't endorsing this. I mean, if it blew up your house or something,
exactly.
I don't want to say that we told you to do it. So we're
on
just
the other hand,
Nancy's.
If it works, we'll take some royalties.
All right, you can do that. Let's go to Judy in Woodstock. Hello, Judy, you're on.
Thank you. Excuse me.
Great expectorations.
Thanks. Right. I have a very. I have about a 3-year-old rescue cat, and she was spayed when she was about 2, and I've had her that long. She's a strictly indoor cat, and she has gotten fat. And I've never had a cat before, and I've had indoor spayed and neutered cats my whole life, that I had to worry about their weight in the way I have with her. She's getting a bit less than a half a cup of wellness, healthy weight twice a day. And she tells me she's starving to death.
Hmm.
And she doesn't seem to lose any weight. She's a very chunky little girl.
Oh, boy.
What does she weigh, Judy?
Well, I don't know, because I haven't been to the vet since, since her spay. I would guess about 10 pounds.
Oh, 10 pounds, not bad. 10 pounds, not bad. The problem, Judy, is that twofold. Number one, just like us humans, when we go from whatever, 15 or 20 years of age to 35 or 40, you start noticing you're not necessarily eating more, and yet you're ballooning out. Okay,
no,
so your metabolism. Right.
She's
well, think about the similar age change in a cat or a dog. That means they're going from about 6 or 8 months of age to about a year and a half or two. So that's comparable, in which they might not necessarily be eating more, and yet they're putting more on more and more weight. So number one, metabolism slows down after the juvenile and teen years, etc. Number two, when they're spayed or neutered, in the case of a male, that also can have an effect on the metabolism. So you slow down the metabolism, and you're not burning up the fuel like you used to, so to speak. Now, number three, I'm wondering, I don't know, you say that the cat's getting just under half a cup. That cat might need even less than that, okay?
Yeah.
I always want to discover, are they getting anything off the table? Are they getting any biscuits or cookies or treats?
No.
Because that obviously adds up as well. But if a half a cup is too much, then you have to go down to less. And I will tell you, Judy, that I work with companies, reputable companies that make prescription foods, and they'll make prescription foods for the exact purpose of having a cat lose weight. And you will follow their directions, and that cat still might not lose weight.
Mm-hmm.
And then they will say, just give it less. And you're giving so little before some of these cats will lose weight. But with your cat being 3 years of age, that means you still have a lot of good materials to work with, as opposed to when the cat's 12 or 14, that's much more challenging to get an obese cat to lose weight.
Huh.
If your cat's 10, doesn't sound too bad, and I think you should be able
cat's to... Cat's three, right?
She's three.
10 pounds, I meant.
Oh, 10
yes.
pounds.
Oh, about, yeah, I think. I'm
yeah,
guessing,
but three,
you know.
3 years old means you got much less challenging materials, so to speak, to work with than if they're older,
active.
Like 12 or 13
okay.
years old. So I would just give a little less than the amount you're given. Cut it down by 20%. See what that does after a month.
Mm-hmm.
If it doesn't do it, there are other things you could do, like these companies that I mentioned, Hills or Royal Canin. They make prescription foods that are specifically for animals losing weight.
Okay.
They'll be low-fat, high-fiber. They'll get full faster, and that would make it easier.
Thanks, Judy. Okay. We appreciate the call. But isn't it sort of a scam if you have a company that says, we're making this thing that'll make the cat, if it eats this food, it'll lose weight, and then you say, well, it's not losing weight, have it eat less. I mean, have it eat less is how you do it anyway.
Yes,
regardless of what you feed the cat.
But you don't go to the. I don't go to those companies until the people have not been able to feed it less of the regular food.
Yeah, I get it. All right, let's go to Alyssa in Rock Hill. Alyssa.
Yes, hi. My neutered kitty came in late the other night smelling horrendous.
Oh, boy.
And it definitely wasn't skunk. It didn't seem to bother him or the other cats. And I'm wondering, could he have unloaded his anal glands? And if so, why did the top of his head stink the worst?
Oh, boy.
It's not anal sacs if the top of his head stunk the worst.
Yeah.
I'd wonder, more of a dog thing to think about, but did he get involved in some kind of carcass and start sniffing it and gets, you know, did he stick his face or his head into some
compost pile or something?
It was not that smell. It smelled like a cross between, like, rotten eggs and rotten motor oil. It was very pungent.
Yeah, so what I would watch out for, Alyssa, especially with hot, humid weather, kind of like what we've had lately, is when they get injured, flies could be looking for places to put their eggs.
Mercy.
And that could cause even way bigger problems than you're talking about as far as maggots. So certain skin conditions, certain bacterial skin infections, for instance, can stink. So what you want to do is wash it off as much as you can. See whether or not there's any skin irritation or problem, because if there's an infection, an antibiotic can make that better. Sure,
okay,
maybe it's just...
He only smelled for... Well, I gave him a bath right away. That took care of 90% of it, and by the next morning, it was all gone. And he's
good
been fine. He is fine.
Good for you. Who knows?
But he got in an altercation and maybe someone else sprayed him?
So there's only one way to answer your question, Alyssa. You got to get one of these GoPro cameras.
I have to ask.
Strap it to the cat.
No.
See what's going on, because otherwise you're not going to know.
Would another cat possibly, I know if they get very scared, they can discharge. Could that have happened? He's been spending a lot of time out in the backwoods.
It's possible, except that cats don't go to the back end to smell at the anal sacs like dogs do. So that's a hard one for me to visualize with a cat. With a dog, that would be easy to visualize.
Well, let's not do any more visualizing. Alyssa, thanks a lot for the
call. Gross and Ray.
Sure, thank you.
Appreciate it very much, sort of. Cindy, and where are you in Massachusetts, Cindy?
Hi, I'm in Wales, Massachusetts.
Ah, okay, well, you're on the air.
Okay, great. Real quickly, I have a 12-year-old female Boston Terrier who, about 2.5 months ago, I suspected of having a UTI because she kept going outside and urinating for a long period of time and then going around trying to urinate and nothing, little drops were coming out. So, long story short, she's had all kinds of tests, many, you know, cultures, ultrasounds, x-rays. She doesn't have an infection. She doesn't have stones. She doesn't have any masses in her bladder. And she's continuing to do it. And she's on Baytril for the second time, and it's really not affecting her at all. So any thoughts on that?
Very few, Cindy. I mean, it sounds like great workup was done because the culture and sensitivity is the gold standard for ruling out bacterial infections. Sometimes your analyses don't show it up. The ultrasound would show up a stone, so would an x-ray. I would be curious what the wall of the bladder looked like on the ultrasound because I don't know about dogs, but I know that cats, like women, can get an interstitial cystitis, something which affects the wall of the bladder, and there's blood and not necessarily any infection.
Well, they said there was no blood, so, you know.
Well, you're looking
for... And they said the urine culture was sterile, was good.
There was no red blood cells, there was no white blood cells, there was no crystals?
There were actually three different kinds of crystals,
okay, so
but there were no blood cells.
You got to put her on a special food, a prescription food.
Yeah, I mean, she's on a raw food diet. I go to a homeopathic vet, and I've actually now consulted with two vets, both totally different. So, you know, I'm getting two different kinds of ideas.
Well, Cindy... I do some homeopathy as well, but in this kind of situation when nothing else is showing up, but there are crystals, that's the only thing that you got. Well, that's the only thing you have to work on.
Right.
I don't think the raw food's going to do it. You want to go to a company, like I mentioned before, Hill's or Royal Canin. They put years of research into it, quality control. They look into what's the best thing to give, and there are foods made for animals with crystals in the urine.
Okay.
And I would totally recommend you do that also. I'd recommend you go with the canned food, not with dry food. Plenty of fresh water available at all times.
Mm-hmm.
You want them drinking as much as you can. And that prescription food, and I'd be very surprised if that didn't do the job eventually. It would take weeks, if not longer.
Cindy, thank you so much for the call. Let's go to Bonnie in Sheffield. Bonnie, you're on.
Hi. I thank you for taking the call. I have a 17-year-old Jack Russell, and there are two things. One, he seems to be reacting more to the heat, even when it's a day like today. And the other part is, in the past few months, he has always loved being in the car, and now he can't, you know, just sit down in the car anymore.
Hmm.
He's always just standing up on his seat. I should mention his eyesight is going and his hearing is just about gone.
I would have to think, Bonnie, that his age has something to do with it, because when animals get old, it's maybe it's true with people too, our senses change, just like you're saying, his vision's gone, his hearing's gone. Our perception of the world, I think, changes, and things that we were okay with before, all of a sudden, or maybe gradually, actually, we're not as comfortable with as we used to be. Maybe the car is making the dog more queasy, and he used to not be queasy about it. The heat is a little more difficult to explain because I'm trying to think of, unless the dog has a fever already, I don't know why, unless there's something with the dog's coat. Now, the coat, the skin makes oils that help us thermoregulate, so it keeps us, or the dogs, cool in the summer and warm in the winter. So I'd wonder about if there's any coat problems, like any dermatological problems. Maybe he's not shedding like he ought to be. Have you brushed him?
Yes, but you know he doesn't shed like he used to.
That might be it. He might have a backlog.
Oh, okay.
He might have a backlog. I would brush him as much as you can as far as the heat.
Mm-hmm.
As far as not liking the car, there's a reason he's not liking it. Either because His vision and hearing are causing him to perceive it differently than he used to, or because he's getting motion sick where he never used to.
Is it a new car?
Or did he have a fall? Before he started not liking the driving in the car, did you stop short and he tumbled and maybe he's got a bad memory? So those are the kinds of things I'd pay attention to.
Could it be a different car, though?
No, same. It's a 9-year-old Subaru.
Okay.
So he's been in that same car and a Subaru before that. Would you give him an anti-anxiety, a little piece?
I think that an anti-anxiety, if you got to take him in the car, is entirely fine to do. Alprazolam is the one we use usually. That's basically generic Xanax.
Mm-hmm.
It's a pretty harmless medication if you don't use it too often.
Right.
And that would be the best one for an older dog going into the car. Also, though, there is another, there's an anti-nausea, anti-vomiting medication called Serenia. And if his not liking the car has anything to do with, queasiness, then that might be another thing that you could do that would avoid having to use an anti-anxiety medication.
Would you spell Serenia?
Sure. Serenia.
Right. Okay, great.
Bonnie, thank you.
Okay, I'm going to go brush his coat.
Good luck, Bonnie. Bye go brush away.
Over to Teresa in Bloomington. You're on.
Hi, this is an anxiety-related question, too. The 4th of July is coming. My dogs hate fireworks, of course. And I'm wondering if you have any experience or opinion on something I've heard about recently. I think it's called a thunder shirt. The point is that it hugs the dog really tight.
Yes.
What's your...
I think it's a great thing to use for a lot of dogs. I don't think all dogs are comforted by it. But I also think, Teresa, that there are several things that you could do in addition to that, any one of which might not be enough. But it's always preferable if you could acclimate the dog to the thunder-like noises and get them to not be as scared. So it's a behavior modification thing where you kind of teach them. It's kind of what I tell my clients is another behavior for their repertoire, and that behavior is called settle. And you reward them when they are acting in a calm fashion. This takes months, okay? And
we're having plenty of thunderstorms. So
well, I know. But that, in addition to number two, that you acclimate them to those noises before you have a storm. So you get a recording of the thunderstorms, and you play it at a very low volume, and you reward them for staying calm. And then over the course of many weeks, you increase that volume, and then you acclimate up to it and desensitize them to that number two, so that when the storm comes, what you want to do, you want to put them into preferably an interior room. That is a room that doesn't have any windows, okay? And if you don't have a room without windows, than a large closet, okay?
Well, because bathroom.
It's not just or the bathroom. It's not just the sound, but it's also the sight of the lightning. So you know sometimes that'll penetrate the curtains on a window. So you want to put them into that interior room with a thunder shirt. Put on loud music, some good loud rock music with a strong bass beat. Okay, and then if all those things are not enough, then an anti-anxiety medication is totally useful.
Okay. Teresa, thanks a lot. Quickly, and we only have about a minute here, let's go to Judy in Amherst. Judy, I'm sorry, but we're coming to the end of the show, so let's make it quick.
Very quick. I have an almost 18-year-old cat, female, spayed, and she had what seemed to be a couple of seizures, so I have her on phenobarbital. And she's supposed to be gaining weight. I am feeding her much more than I used to, and she seems to be losing weight.
Okay.
Well, I'd wonder what's causing the seizures, because epilepsy typically does not start at that age, Judy. So it's more of a middle-aged onset thing. So if your cat's having seizures, I'd look for other causes than epilepsy. I'd do some blood work. I'd look at the organs. I'd look around for any potential toxins or poisonous plants. And it's possible the losing weight is due to either an age thing. I mean, when we get that age, we start shriveling up, or some physical thing going on that might also be causing the seizures. So I do a workup. I'd look into it. And, phenobarb often causes weight gain, but when you're an 18-year-old cat, it's kind of hard to get fat. So,
all right.
Yeah, good luck to you, Judy.
Yeah, and I guess that's where we'll have to leave it. Judy, thanks a lot for the call. We appreciate it. Well, that was a busy show, eh, Ron?
We got through some cases here, Ray.
We did good, and I appreciate you coming. And how, oh, you count, you tally? How many you got?
14, 15, 16, 17,
18. 18 today, yeah. plus the email? Or did you count the
email?
No,
it includes the email.
All right, well, yeah. Well done. We'll try to up that number next time you're here.
Doesn't Ron, include the shares.
All right. Ron Scharf of the Animal Hospital of Niskayuna. Thanks, Ron, for being here. Thanks to everybody who called in. Support comes from the Arkell Museum at Canajoharie, presenting Surrounded, sampling Birchfield's wallpaper, opening Friday with original designs and watercolors by Charles Birchfield, arkellmuseum.org. Planned Parenthood Mid-Hudson Valley, providing sexual and reproductive health and education services in Dutchess, Orange, Ulster, and Sullivan counties for over 80 years, ppmhv.org. Siegel Music Colony, Scroon Lake, New York, celebrating 100 years, bringing music to the North Country in 2015 with performances and events now through August 16th. SiegelColony.org for schedule. And the Honest Weight Food Co-op, 100 Waterfleet Avenue, Albany, New York, specializing in local and organic produce, natural groceries, fine cheeses, locally raised meats, and ready-to-go organic meals. HonestWeight.coop. Thanks again for listening. Thanks to everybody who called in. Thanks to Dr. Ron Scharf. Thanks to our engineer, Jessica O'Rourke. Your calls were answered by Bruce Herbach. Our producer, Jessica Blaustein Marshall. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, yeah, it's the Gardening Show. Stay tuned now for a news update.